Fusion, the international science radio show.
We have a bouncer and the doors of perception.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
It gets pretty exciting.
The myths, the truths.
Toxicology.
Astro-seismology.
Magnetism. The dark side.
Genetically engineered potatoes.
Planetoid.
Planetoid.
I love that word.
Hello and welcome to Diffusion. Sit back and relax while we steady your brain with weird and wonderful science. I'm Ian Wolfe. On this edition, Dr. Viv Robinson rewrites cosmology. But first up, here's news of a new kind of renewable energy. Renewable energy from thick air. An electrical engineer and a microbiologist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the US have found a new way to safely harness the source of lightning by harvesting the electric charges on water molecules in humid air, hygro electricity. They call it AirGen, for air-powered generator. The team used materials made with tiny holes for the water molecules to enter, bounce around, and transfer their electric charge. If you live somewhere with 30% or higher humidity, like a coast or the tropics, the humidity of the air means you could extract power all day, every day. This is a miniature version of Nikola Tesla's dream 90 years ago. Nikola Tesla investigated connecting the upper atmosphere with the Earth to collect the static electricity before it could form lightning. He started building a tower to achieve this in Wardenclyffe, but he was robbed of royalties by George Westinghouse and the tower burned down after he ran out of funds. Today, the site of his last laboratory at Wardenclyffe is the Tesla Science Centre, dedicated to teaching the history of Nikola Tesla's legacy. The University of Massachusetts team made the discovery by accident, while developing a simple tiny sensor to detect humidity in the air using protein nanowires made by bacteria. The PhD student working on the project forgot to connect the power, but noticed that he got a signal anyway. He worked out that atmospheric humidity was essential to generating the current. Each nanowire or nanotube was less than 1,000th the diameter of a human hair, wide enough that an airborne water molecule could enter, but so narrow it would bump around inside the tube before it left again. Each bump transferred a small charge from the water molecule to the nanotube material, and as there were more bumps, one end of the tube became differently charged from the other, one positive, the other negative. Connect the two ends and you get a flow of current. The water passes back out into the air, ready to get charged up by friction in the atmosphere all over again. Completely renewable. Now that they know they can generate power, the team have advanced from nanotubes to nanoporous materials with millions of tiny holes to get as much water from the air into the device as possible. Their current device is the area of a thumbnail and the thickness of less than a quarter of a human hair, which can generate enough power to light a single pixel on a large LED screen, about 1 microwatt. They plan to stack these sheets to increase the power to any required amount. A big engineering challenge will be to keep microbes and fungus from colonizing the small damp spaces of the power units. A similar idea using zirconium oxide instead of bacterial protein nanotubes is being developed by a formerly academic team from the CATCHA project in Lisbon in Portugal, funded by the EU, started in 2015. They have a startup company, Cascata Chuva, to commercialise the project. Their current device is a thin grey disc measuring 4 centimetres across and can generate 10 milliamps at 1.5 volts. 20,000 of those, stacked into a washing machine-sized cube, can generate 10 kilowatt hours of energy, which is enough to power the average household. They plan to have a prototype ready to demonstrate by 2024. The problem with using zirconium oxide is that the richest deposits are in Ukraine, which is kind of busy at the moment. the team suggests that the humid air power generator could be incorporated into building materials, into modules for homes, or aggregated into power stations in locations from tropical to subtropical islands, rainforests, and coastlines. Anywhere where relative humidity is over 30%. They estimate that air humidity power could provide 500 times the current electricity needs of the world. Surely the team from Lisbon are talking to their fellow scholars at Massachusetts about collaborating to make their shared dream a reality? Imagine a renewable power source with no pollution that could power apartments that can't install solar panels and can run all day and all night. Their paper was titled Generic Air Gen Effect in Nanoporous Materials for Sustainable Energy Harvesting from Air Humidity and was published in the journal Advanced Materials. Preventing Long COVID. Researchers from a collaboration of many American universities and research centres have found that giving people a two-week course of metformin within 3 days of testing positive with COVID-19 reduces their chances of developing long COVID by 40% over the next 10 months. Metformin is a cheap, safe, and widely available diabetes drug. The study covered over 1,000 people who tested positive to COVID in the previous 3 days, but had no previous history of having COVID. They all had a higher risk of suffering severe COVID as they were overweight. Their regular doctors followed up their symptoms after 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 months, in order to not only measure what was happening to them over time, but to cover the changes in how long COVID was defined by the medical community. By the 10th month, 6.3% of those given metformin had developed long COVID, compared to 10.4% of those who were given the placebo. 10.4% getting long COVID on the placebo matches up to other research. A study titled Long COVID, Major Findings, Mechanisms and Recommendations, published in Nature Review Microbiology this year, shows that at a conservative estimate, at least 10% of people infected with COVID-19 will go on to develop long COVID, even if their symptoms at the time of infection were mild. That study concluded that up to half of the patients with long COVID qualified as meeting international criteria for myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, which usually involves lifetime disabilities. A long COVID inquiry through the Australian Federal Parliament's Committee on Health, Aged Care and Sport published its report in April 2023, Sick and Tired, Casting a Long Shadow. The American Metformin study found that the sooner participants in the trial started their metformin after testing positive, the stronger the protective effect. Other parts of this trial tested ivermectin and fluvoxamine and found that neither drug had any effect in protecting against long COVID. The Royal Australian College of Physicians, despite a long campaign from patient advocacy groups, refuses to change their 22-year-old definitions and thoroughly disproved treatment recommendations for myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome. Treatments like graded exercise have been shown to badly hurt people with myalgic encephalomyelitis and have been banned in most places around the world. It's a long time since 2002. The Australian government have denied many people suffering myalgic encephalomyelitis the disability support pension and support from the National Disability Insurance Scheme, NDIS, based on the unscientific and outdated declarations of the Royal Australian College of Physicians. I covered some of this last year when I spoke to the president of Emerge, a myalgic encephalomyelitis advocacy organisation that have been lobbying for an update to the clinical guidelines for many years. As more people get infected and go on to develop long COVID, and then myalgic encephalomyelitis, the need for updated Australian guidelines for diagnosis and treatment become more urgent. Will the Australian government recommend metformin as a first-line treatment for people who get infected with COVID-19 to prevent them from getting long COVID? The Australian Therapeutic Goods Administration currently severely restricts access to antivirals based on the cost, but metformin is cheap. The paper was titled outpatient treatment of COVID-19 and incidences of post-COVID-19 condition over 10 months, a multi-centre randomised quadruple-blind parallel group phase 3 trial, and was published in the journal The Lancet Infectious Diseases.
You're listening to Ian Wolfe on Diffusion Science Radio. Send emails to science@diffusionradio.com. We're brought to you across Australia on the Community Radio Network and podcast over the internet on www.diffusionradio.com.
When we look into the sky with our eyes and our telescopes, we see radiation in the form of gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet, visible light, infrared, radio, and microwaves. We interpret that radiation by our standard model of cosmology into planets, stars, galaxies, and nebulas in a universe that started almost 14 billion years ago, in a Big Bang, that's expanding faster and faster. Unfortunately, the predictions of the standard model of cosmology don't match the motion of stars, the mass of ancient galaxies, and the large-scale structure of the universe that we observe in the sky. So we've been forced to add fudge factors, like dark matter and dark energy, to try and explain what we see. Over half a century, we've never detected dark matter or dark energy, so maybe the standard model is wrong? In part two of our interview, Dr. Viv Robinson says the Big Bang never happened, and the universe isn't expanding at all. It's a very big and a very bold claim. I spoke to him by Zoom and continued by asking him, so, what about the expansion of the universe, the acceleration of the expansion of the universe that astronomers have observed?
The universe is not expanding. First of all, the odds of the expanding universe surviving in any form this long, about 1 in 10 to the 60. So I'm quite happy to toss my heads and tails with anybody who's prepared to put up enough money to you couldn't even get past 1 in 10, which is give you a 1,000 to 1 chance, or maybe 1 in 20, which is 1,000,000 to 1. But if somebody wants to play a game of chance with me, $50 a pop or something like that, I'd be
good. If I could just interrupt you for a minute, does that mean you're saying that an expanding universe is unstable and... because our universe, it wouldn't have lasted, 13 billion years or whatever they were saying the age was.
The odds of it are, this is where, I won't mention names, but a prominent cosmologist pointed out that, there must be 10 to the 60 parallel universes in a multiverse. Now, really? Do you have to go to that extent to explain something that's staring you in the face? Because the other, it's infinite, it's steady state, or with it was that what I'm describing, all of the problems. I say, a universe, an infinite universe would run out of hydrogen a long time ago. No. Gravity has a peculiar property that as the mass gets really, really strong, gravity gets weaker. And quasars are just very, very massive objects where the gravity in the centre has got so weak that when it compressed into neutron stars, the neutrons are reverted back to hydrogen and the gas pressure is just so strong that it just finds a weakness and bursts its way through. The weakness will always be at the pole, the rotating neutron star. And then it's got eons and eons of energy stored up and it just releases it. So gravity reverses entropy. That should be fairly obvious. I mean, the galaxy, the solar system formed from a mass of gas and dust and collapsed in. Well, which is more ordered? The planet with a few stars revolving around of it, or this huge amount of gas just moving around in random direction? I suggest the planets orbiting around the sun is a lot more ordered than huge clouds of dust. So gravity reverses entropy.
So the astronomers have observed things like redshift of the stars, and that was what led to the explanation that the universe is expanding. So obviously you have a different explanation for the same data.
Yeah. Well, the most common particles in the universe are cosmological neutrinos. And neutrinos are emitted during the fusion process, but they travel in an infinite universe. They go on and on and on and on forever. Well, the density, the best I can figure out, the density of these cosmological neutrinos are just very, very low energy photons rotating of a particular sort. But the density of them is about 10 to the 13 per cubic meter. That's a lot. But they're everywhere, and they influence. You never know, they go straight through. They can't react with anything. That's their problem. Well, they can, but the reactions are so. But then if you, so what the suggestion is that gives a property, the space, a property called viscosity. Now, the thing about viscosity is it slows things down according to its momentum, but it doesn't scatter them. And so if you say that the instead of the Hubble's constant being the increase in speed, you'll say that it's the loss of momentum compared to the loss of momentum as photons move through it, then you need a, in photons, a typical green photon, for example, traveling 100 million light years, would lose about 1.0007% of its momentum. So the next 100 million, it loses a little bit less momentum because its momentum has reduced. So the neutrinos, cosmological, they're huge everywhere. That's really the only, it has the same effect on particles as well, on protons and electrons and that. But until they travel tens of millions of light, or hundreds of thousands or millions, tens of millions of light years, the effect is so small. However, the speed of light is determined by that property of space called electric permittivity. And that's essentially the same for all space that's not near matter. And so the speed is determined by the electric permittivity, but the energy is slowed down by the photons passing through this sea of neutrinos. So they will still travel at the same speed, but they will just lose momentum equals losing energy equals redshift. And that match gives a vastly better, gives a much better match than with the measured magnitudes of stars versus their distance is an exact fit. That curve gives an exact fit for what is observed. So rather than measuring the increased expansion universe, they're actually measuring exactly what you would expect if the universe was infinite and steady state. And it uses the Hubble's constant, the measured Hubble's constant, to get that answer.
So what you're saying is that they're not measuring the speed of stars moving away from us, they're measuring how far away they actually are. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. They're measuring that according to this viscosity theory. The big difference is that in the Big Bang, everything's fine up to about 3-4 billion light years. Then it starts to differ. And a redshift of 5 on this viscosity is about 25 billion light years, where a redshift of 5 on the Big Bang theory is about 12 billion light years. So double, if a redshift of 5, double the distance gives you 5 times as much, a huge increase in the number of stars. And they can build bigger and better and more improved telescopes. All they're going to see is fully formed galaxies as far as the telescopes can range. And then they'll run out, probably the redshift will be the order of 10, well, it depends on what they can do, 10, 20, In 30, 40, 50 billion light years away. That's probably about the limit. No, I won't say that. You've got no idea how good experimentalists are. The other thing to bear in mind is that cosmic background radiation, which they say a residual of the Big Bang, is actually just the background temperature. I mean, Sir Arthur Eddington in 1926 or 29 pointed out that an infinite steady state universe would have a temperature of about 3.2 degrees K. And they're saying, well, the measured value of 2.713 degrees K 70 years later, even by 1950, somebody pointed out the temperature is much closer to 2.8 degrees K. And while Eddington was working these out, people like Bondi were saying it could be 6 degrees K, it could be 50 degrees K. The problem that the people like Fred Hoyle faced, they had no explanation as to why an infinite steady state wouldn't collapse. Now that if somebody goes and has a look at Einstein's work and works out that, yes, gravity gets weaker. There's the reason why it won't escape. And all that's happened in between is all the evidence that they've found supporting a Big Bang has all been engineered, sometimes mathematically engineered, to pretend that it's Big Bang is the only alternative. My only suggestion is that the first of the cosmologists to get out and use this steady state theory will make a pretty good reputation for themselves. They'll find that all those things that the Big Bang ostensibly matched by this, only this one matches many more. And like I say, anybody for a game chance and 10 to the 60 odds? Well, I don't think so. Some of this is starting to appear in print. I don't know whether I can mention a website or not.
Oh, certainly.
Go to a website. It's an unfinished website, but www.universephysics.com. There is some of that up there, and I'll be putting more up there and getting some more stuff out in print. But for anyone who really wants to do a Google search or an internet search for physical explanations of Einstein's gravity, and you'll find that my name will appear somewhere near the top. That's an Institute of Physics publication, and they are real strict reviewers, that lot. They are good. they don't let anything go through. Or don't let much go through that isn't correct.
There have been all sorts of observations coming out of stars that are older than 13 billion years old, that is supposed to be the age of the universe since the Big Bang. So that would support the steady state, perhaps.
That would be very difficult to... be very difficult to find anything that the Big Bang theory supports that is not supported by this. I mean, they've been searching, even the missing mass of the universe, dark matter, they've been searching for this for 50 years. It's not needed. The galaxies are orbiting as expected. Not a sign of them are being seen. Now, experimentalists aren't that bad. And I just basically suggest that what should have happened a long time ago is that experimentalists go back, listen, just between you and me, we can't find any. So how about you think of another theory? Well, don't think of another theory. What is the other theory? They're not going to find a dark energy, a dark matter. They're not needed to explain what astronomers have done a wonderful job in observing.
Well, Viv Robinson, thank you so much for your time.
No problem. I look forward to maybe we can resume the discussion at some other time.
For sure. That was the second and final installment of my interview with Dr. Viv Robinson. You heard Viv say that matter is made of photons moving in circles. Physicists took Einstein's approximations as gospel instead of using the exact solutions, possible with later mathematics. Gravity changes to be weaker over distances. The universe isn't expanding, and the Big Bang never happened. Unfortunately, his website, universephysics.com, is down at the moment, but I can link to the Wayback Machine's archive on the show notes. If you have any questions for Viv, he'd love to answer them on the show. So send your questions to science@diffusionradio.com.
And that's all from us this week on Diffusion. Are you a scientist, artist, biohacker, or maker who'd like to be interviewed about your work? Would your company like to sponsor Diffusion? Send your contributions, opinions, helpful suggestions, and donations to science@diffusionradio.com. That's science@diffusionradio.com. Please subscribe to the Diffusion Science Radio channel on youtube.com/c/diffusionradio and rate the show on iTunes. Tell your friends. Follow me on Twitter @IanWolf. The news music was Rhinos Theme by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I produce Diffusion, which is broadcast around Australia to 28 stations on the Community Radio Network, including Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM in New South Wales, 8CCC in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek, 2MVR in Nambucca Valley, 3MVR in the Mallee Border districts of Victoria and South Australia, City Park Radio 7LTN in Launceston, Tasmania, and 2XXFM in Canberra. Diffusion is narrowcast on Indigo FM 88 in northeast Victoria. Diffusion is syndicated globally on astronomy.fm. Subscribe to the podcast on the Diffusion website, www.diffusionradio.com. That's www.diffusionradio.com. And check the website for links, photos, and videos about this week's show. If you enjoyed the show, you can explore more than 1,000 previous episodes archived on diffusionradio.com, where the shows are labeled by keywords so you can focus in on the stories you want to hear. Make a donation through paypal.me/IanWolf or join my patrons at patreon.com/diffusionradio. I'm Ian Wolf. Join us inside your audio device of choice for more science wondering next week on Diffusion Science Radio.
Science is fun. It helps you to learn, to know, and to appreciate. When you study science, you may go on field trips. You discover the marvelous interrelationships between all living things. You learn to read the history of the Earth as it is written in rocks and fossils. You find out what makes things tick. Everything from a molecule to a living organism. In the study of science is found the most useful and satisfying knowledge of man. Knowledge of his physical world, its past, its present, and its future. And in your moments of relaxation, now and in the years to come, you will find the study of science leading you into fascinating pursuits. Photography. Collecting. Why study science? Study science because you will find in the study of science a richer, more rewarding life.